From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Noah Adams. Last week's attacks were nightmares for those who witnessed them in New York and at the Pentagon. People could see or hear the explosions, taste the dust and smoke. There's no question they have undergone a traumatic experience. For the rest of the world, the experience was filtered through images and eyewitness accounts. These may have been less tangible, but according to mental health professionals, they are also traumatic. NPR's Christopher Joyce has a report.
It's doubtful that any crime in history has had more witnesses. It may have been the radio where people heard it first, or the television. But as Nina Kaplan, a Los Angeles lawyer and mother of two, explained to an NPR reporter, geography and the safety of home did not insulate people from the horror.
We saw it on TV at 7 a.m. The World Trade Center smoking and the Pentagon smoking, it was very surreal. Yeah, it was terrifying.
Americans are certainly not alone in having witnessed tragedy on a massive scale. Harvey Weinstein is a psychiatrist at the University of California at Berkeley who has counseled survivors of genocide in the Balkans and in Rwanda.
The issue in the Balkans or in Rwanda is people did see it, but they were on the ground with it. They saw it quite clearly. Here, for most Americans, it was on a screen. I think they've shown the planes flying into the building thousands of times. And in a sense that for those people at a distance, it almost, from my perspective, re-traumatizes. I mean, you're forced to watch it over and over and over again.
It's hard to imagine anyone arguing that the media should simply not show and tell what happened in New York and at the Pentagon, or not interview eyewitnesses and survivors and family members. But how much and for how long? That's the question that concerns Rosa Garcia Peltonimi. She's a clinical psychologist and director of the Center for Victims of Torture. She says people who listen to the stories of torture victims undergo their own secondary trauma as a result. And she now worries for the American public.
There is a concept called vicarious traumatization, and that's the experience of trauma-related stress caused by working closely with trauma survivors. And I think that this concept has something to teach us about what may happen to the general population as well.
Peltonimi says people who continue to view the stressful images may have nightmares and suffer other symptoms of anxiety. She says that's normal. It's not post-traumatic or acute stress disorder, much more profound phenomena. But Peltonimi says it's important for people to take control of what and how they follow these events in the media.
Information has survival value. Human beings are exquisitely designed to survive. So this is one of the reasons why we're so drawn to information at this time. That is how we get to it and how it gets to us. That is important.
That could mean watching less television or reading rather than watching and taking time to talk about feelings with others. Psychologists point out that the media do provide an outlet for people to express their feelings about the disaster. While journalists are sometimes seen as ghoulish in their enthusiasm for getting the story, it's sometimes true that victims want others to listen. That's the experience of psychologist Jack Saul, who runs the International Trauma Studies Program at New York University.
People, particularly victims, need to be heard by not just the people who are close to them, but some people want the general public to know what they've been through and want their stories to be a part of the kind of collective story that will be evolving.
Saul cautions that the press should not assume it has carte blanche to ask anyone anything at any time. Saul has talked to victims of war and disaster, and he says that while many want to talk, they are vulnerable.
It may be the first time a person's talked about what's happened to them, and some people may start to get overwhelmed by their recalling the experience. I think that the media need to be sensitive to that. Some people leave an interview quite disoriented and disturbed.
Saul advises journalists to give victims a sense of control over an interview. Interviewees should have friends or family nearby. Journalists might call people later to check up on them. And, he says, journalists need to learn when to back off. Christopher Joyce, NPR News, Washington.